Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you, big book study. My name is Barbara P. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, April 22nd. Today we're reading from the big book on page 32, the second paragraph, and we're starting in the middle of that paragraph, beginning with the eighth sentence. And that starts with, out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. And we'll end at the end of that paragraph quickly, and was dead within 4 years. Our readers today are on the 12 steps, Judith S.P., 12 traditions, Penny C. Readers of the text will be Sally A. Marjo will be closing us out. Our newcomer greeter today is going to be Reba P., our host of the second hour, so stand by for that. It's always great, as Pete B. And our announcements will be Kathy S. Let's see, reference numbers for yesterday, April 21st, the 7 a.m. meeting is 23385, and the 10 a.m. meeting is 23386. COA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. COA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states each group has but one primary purpose: carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So I'll now ask Judith S.P. to come in and read our tradition, our steps, please.
Good morning, Barbara. Good morning, everyone. My name is Judith S.P., located here in Maryland. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to restore our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us, and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Judith S.P. And will Penny C. please read our traditions?
Yes, good morning. This is Penny C. I'm recovered compulsive overeater from the Boston area. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thanks so much, Penny C. So how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass and then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the readers should be, or the speakers should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 32, the second paragraph, beginning with the 8th sentence. Out came his carpet, slippers, and a bottle, and we'll be ending with quickly and was dead within 4 years. I'm going to ask Sally A to step up and please get us going.
Good morning again, Barbara. This is Sally A in New York, recovered by the miracle of my God. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. In 2 months, he was in the hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate his drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital meantime. Then, gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not. Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years. Well, of course, we read yesterday he remained bone dry for 25 years, which means he was a dry drunk, possibly, probably. And when we come down the page to where we are reading today, we see that also was read yesterday, after this long period of sobriety and self-discipline, it had qualified him to drink as other men. I wish that were the case. I wish that I could say that if I am abstinent for 25 years, I'll get to have my birthday cake with everybody, or I'll get to have the celebratory pizza on the half holidays. And I wish that that could be true, but I know from my own experience and my own stumblings back into the food that that's just not true. I know for myself, when he says he tried to regulate, he was trying to diet. He was trying to control. The word regulate definitely is another word for control. His drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital. We don't even have a place to go that we can say, hey, lock me, chain me to some kind of a radiator so I can get clean and start again. We don't have that opportunity. Then gathering all his forces, this reminds me so much of my cartoon friend Elmer Fudd, rolling up his sleeves and marching to get that wabbit. Gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether. Maybe if I could just do what I did 25 years ago and just stop. But he could not. And every means of solving his problem, who knows what he tried. He might have been just like Roland Hazard and gone all over Europe looking for different methods to stop. Every attempt failed. And though he was a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead in 4 years. For myself, I had severe GERD, Barrett syndrome, very severe. My A1C had climbed to 5.9. My knees were in horrible pain. I actually figured out that once I reach 184, that's where the pain starts. So I have to keep it under the 184. I'm 5'2". If I was 6', that would sound good. I was on a CPAP machine, but I refused to use it because I didn't want to sound like Darth Vader. And then I had horrible depression because I knew this was so embarrassing to my kids that their mom was up and down 100 pounds. And so, long story short, I did give up. I gave up, but I turned my face upward to my higher power, my Lord and my Savior, and I'm saved because of it. The 12 steps are, as someone says so beautifully, the treasure map. This book is a treasure map that leads us into a healthy and right relationship with our higher power and a right relationship with food. And that's all I've got. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, Sally A., for getting us started. We appreciate you. I'll go ahead and take a list of names. Although we value your experience, we just ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. But we'd love to hear from some folks. So who would like to share today on this paragraph?
Karen G.
Cheryl A.
Mary S.
Okay, I heard Harland. I think I heard Cheryl.
Mary S.
Nick.
Reba P.
Mary, Nick.
Reba P.
Reba, got you. I thought I might have heard you in the background. But so far, look how you are. Oh, Nancy R. So I've got Harland, Cheryl, Mary, Nick, Reba, Nancy. That's who I've heard. Who didn't I hear in that batch?
Sarah G.
Sarah, got you. Okay, let's start right there. We'll have plenty of time for more. We're going to go ahead and get started with Harlan G, and you'll be followed by Cheryl. Didn't catch a last initial. So, and please let us know where you're from when you start. So, Harlan, go ahead.
Thanks, Barbara. Thanks very much. I'm Harlan G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. Non-alcoholic people do not sit and obsess for 25 years about drinking. This dry drunk was sitting there and obsessing. He was a dry drunk for 25 years. Now, you're not going to see that with food because food being a different addiction, you are not going to see anybody that is going to successfully diet for 25 years. We have people in OA, and I was one of them, that are here dieting with group support. They're not really working. I wasn't working a program. I was just dieting with group support, and that is a miserable, miserable way to live. It's a miserable existence. But what is this paragraph and what are we reading today? What is the gem here for me to take out of so I can live free of the food? It's telling me once again that the disease is progressive. And it is telling me in the most stark way that abstinence or sobriety does not treat this disease. When I came into OA 47 years ago, at every meeting you could possibly go to, there were many people saying abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. Abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. Now, I don't want to get any calls later that says, Harlan says we don't have to be abstinent. I never said that. But abstinence is not, and I repeat, not the main idea here. It is the entrance ramp to the highway. Page 45, the main object of this book is to help you find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. If it's the main object of this book, it better be the main object of my life. He was puzzled and humiliated. I could not understand why after being abstinent for 3 minutes or 3 days or a week, in some cases a month, why was it that I was knee-deep in food? I couldn't understand it when my friends resisted it so easily. And he tried to regulate his drinking. I tried to regulate my eating, making several trips to the hospital meantime. And then he's gathering all his forces. He attempted to stop altogether. I couldn't do that either. The disease is permanent. We're going to see that again tomorrow, where we're going to read the words tomorrow, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. I am no less of an alcoholic today than I was 27 years ago when I put the food down. I am more because the disease is progressive. And it says here he was dead within 4 years. And if this disease has taught me anything, if untreated, it is 100% fatal. I can die from the disease or with the disease. I choose to die with the disease. Barbara, thank you very much for your service. I appreciate that. With that, I'll pass.
You are welcome. Thanks, Harlan. Cheryl, you're up, followed by Mary.
Hi, good morning. This is Cheryl, a recovered compulsive overeater in Brookline, Massachusetts. The man of 30 always reminds me that I cannot manage my disease with intelligence. What it does is it creates an illusion of control. First, it was only beer, no hard liquor, only drinking at certain times, exercising discipline and rules. But over time, it seems to work until it doesn't. Everything starts to loosen because the deeper point is that it's a psychological pattern. It's a disease that I can't control. The pattern of illusion is that I've figured it out this time. I can do this. As Harlan was saying before, that abstinence somehow is what's going to cure me. And I have a mental twist, and I have an obsession that precedes a first bite, and intelligence will never solve it. Anything that I've ever tried to tackle, from books to coaches, to medical intuitives, I could go on and on and on, not only with food, but in everywhere that this disease manifests itself, it, with my illusion of controlling my life and my time. There are certain tools that we use that help, but when it comes to treating this disease, the only thing that has ever helped me is working these steps and developing a relationship with a higher power that continues to grow. The idea that I can partially control this can be really, really seductive almost. It's like just enough, but I will always collapse. I don't always talk about food because I've been applying and I've been focusing so much on emotional sobriety and time of late. But I remember the days of dieting and dieting and dieting and gaining lots of weight and showing up Thanksgiving after my freshman year of college, 50 pounds more than my identical twin sister, and wanting to just crawl into a hole. But somehow, 38 years after entering Overeaters Anonymous, I continue to be in the same size body in my recovered state. And I only do that by working these steps day after day after day after day and listening to all of you. I don't want false mastery anymore. I don't want that. I want to live free. I want to live joyfully. And sometimes it's a trudge towards the joy, but I, as long as I keep trudging one day at a time, deep in the middle of the solution, which is applying these steps to my life, I feel such and tremendous gratitude for that clarity. And I feel such gratitude to study with you all today. Thanks for listening.
Thanks so much, Cheryl A. from Massachusetts. Mary, you are up. You'll be followed by Nick. Did I hear Mary C., I believe, star one?
Hi, it's Mary S. from Delray Beach, recovering overeater. What an example of permanent and progressive and fatal. When I think of the man of 30, I think of someone that chose ambition and discipline as his higher power. This man had ambition. He wanted to succeed in life. So after all those years and retiring young, that he activated the allergy again by picking up his alcohol. And then what? Then what? He had no idea what had happened. You know, they tell us our disease will continue to progress whether we're eating or not. And when we pick up, it's as if we never, ever stopped. It's not like we picked up where we left off. We picked up and then our bodies and our minds respond and react as if we've been eating our red foods this whole time. And that's what happened to this man of 30. And now he was puzzled. What could he do? And it was like he went out there and he's like, well, how can I stop? What's going on? He did not have the tools that we do, the steps and the idea of the higher power. It's very difficult to go after the last three people who've shared because they so eloquently expressed what he was going through. You know, that discipline and that knowledge that he had during those dry years wasn't sobriety. You know, he, whatever his hole in the soul was, he was filling it with outside validation, not realizing that what he needed was a sense of a higher power. So what happened? Permanent, progressive, fatal. Within 4 years, he was dead. That too could be us. Like someone had said earlier, that they would immediately go back. You know, 184 is their limit. You know, then the knees, the A1C, whatever. So this man, unfortunately, did not have the exposure and the tools that he needed to once again live a good life. And with that, I'd like to pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mary S. from Florida. Nick F., you're coming in, and Reba, you'll be following. And let me, Nick, before you get going, let's just say where we are. We're on page 32, the second paragraph, beginning with the eighth sentence. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle, reading through the end of that paragraph. Nick, go right ahead.
Can I be heard?
Yeah, you sure can.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much, Barbara, for your service. Thank you to the amazing Sherris. My name is Nikki F. I'm in Tennessee, and I'm definitely a compulsive overeater. Everybody else is saying it, like the progression, and I wish I didn't have like an eyewitness statement. Like, this is my experience. You know, this guy took him within 4 years to die. You know, by the grace of God, I didn't die. God wouldn't allow me to kill myself, even though I begged. Within 8 months of my relapse, I was back on my hands and knees asking God to please let me take my life. Like, the pain in my chest and the pain in my head was so great that all I could think of was death. Never mind the 100 pounds that I had gained. That's not why I was on my knees. It's something about when I put certain ingredients inside of my body, they do something to me mentally, physically, and above all, spiritually. I have no desire to live, no desire to draw another breath. And, you know, I really didn't want to share this morning because I'm kind of in my feelings, but this is my medicine. You know, I'm in my feelings about some relationship issues, and never mind the issues with my son. I'm getting a good report by the grace of God for my son. I don't know if that'll last, but I'm in my feelings, but I'm not in my refrigerator. And so though I'm not very happy this morning, I'm most grateful and have so much gratitude to this God who is not allowing me to go to McDonald's today. I bought a grill yesterday. I'm free today. I get to go and prepare my own meals. I get to go and visit my son Saturday that's in a behavioral health facility. I get to make plans and stick to the plans. I sent my sponsor my food this morning and you know, my abstinence time this morning. I sent my sponsor my abstinence time this morning because every day, because back in the, you know, back in my relapse, by the end of the night, I was no longer abstinent, and I didn't really care whether she knew or anybody knew. I didn't really know what was going on at all. But today, for 89 days, back to back to back, this miracle has fell upon me. And so, you know, I guess when you're not in the food and when you're not in program, like this guy, he wasn't in the drink, but he wasn't in the program. Death waits for me, and that's my story. And I'm just so glad, even in all of my emotion, to get to share today. And thank you all for still being here. And with that, I pass.
Thanks so much, Nick F. Reba P., you are up, and be followed by Nancy R.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Thank you. Wonderful shares. This paragraph, this story, this chapter for me hits home what it means for me to be a real compulsive overeater. Yes, permanent, progressive, fatal, but that twofold nature, the physical twist, mental obsession, you know, my thinking. I understood this book when I first came into program that I had a physical allergy. You know, I was bulimic and consuming thousands and thousands of calories of my binge foods. And, you know, once he started, he had no control, whatever. I identified with that right away. And that was a relief to see that on paper. And that it was called a physical allergy with that phenomenon of craving after I ingest that. I got that. But I didn't really think so much that I had the mental twist. I thought it really was just about the food and that abstinence only would treat this. And I learned when the food was down in program, in abstinence, what it meant to be a real compulsive overeater. Because, you know, I know people with allergies, they don't think about the stuff that hurts them and causes them rashes and whatever, anaphylactic reactions. They just don't have it. But I have this mental twist that even once the physiological, you know, detox is over, my mind will bring me back to the substance. So here he, you know, where was the turning point in this story? He fell victim to the belief, the thought that after X number of years, days, minutes, whatever, I can pick up again. The delusion. That's what makes me a compulsive overeater. And that does not get treated by abstinence only. For that, I cannot exert my will. I can't throw money at it. I can't throw doctors, therapists to fix me. Because he tried, look at this, four times. He tried and tempt. He tried harder. You know, when I'm trying harder, I'm in self-will and I'm in trouble. I'm in big, big trouble. I need to align my will with God's. I can't do that if I'm blocked. So I have to do the steps to unblock me. I can then access power, align with God's will. So what a great reminder why I need to do the steps, because my mind will always bring me back to the things I'm allergic to. And the last thing I wanted to say is it also reminds me, you know, it's hard to get here. It's hard to put the food down and do the steps. Yes, it's a challenge, but I think sometimes it's harder to stay here because I have to keep my mind thinking in check by constantly being vigilant about 10, 11, and 12. Otherwise, my mind after a year, 25 years, 30, 50, I don't care, will bring me right back to this. So with that, I pass.
Thanks, Reba P. Appreciate your share. Nancy R., you are up, and Sarah Scott, you'll be followed by Sarah G., and then we'll be taking a new list of names. Nancy R.
Good morning. It's Nancy R. From Illinois, a recovering compulsive overeater. Just haven't checked in on this talk, shared it in this meeting for a while, so wanted to, said yes to the leading from my higher power to put my name out there. So I'm grateful for the willingness to do the next right thing. This is a scary story. And one that I can relate to. For me, it wasn't when I have had periods of abstinence and I go back to the food, it isn't so much that I think, oh, I can have it now. I know what's going to happen, and this disease does not care. The thinking that I have does not care. Like, I know it's not going to be good what happens, but I don't care. I am powerless over not caring. And so I need to surrender and have this relationship with my higher power who guides me and gives me what I need to care. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Nancy R. Sarah G., you are up, and then we'll take another list of names.
Good morning. This is Sarah G. calling from New York. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful for all of you, for the people I know and for the people who I don't know yet. We're all in this together. So what happened for me when I came onto the meeting this morning is that I heard the moderator say what the reading is, and I heard that he was dead in 4 years. I do know this story, but it just hit my heart and was like, how painful. You know, this disease is so cunning and baffling and so strong, and, you know, God is so much bigger and so much stronger, and that's what it's about. It's to have a relationship, you know, with God. For me, this is what it is for me. And then the second thing that happened, you know, before the meeting started is that I claimed my seat. I introduced myself being on the meeting. And then the moderator was so welcoming. And I don't know if I've ever spoken to her, or spoken to you, I should say, in an outreach call. But I just feel like, you know, we're family. We really are. We have the same DNA as I learned from one of my program people here. Like, that's what it is. And this is the way, this is a design for living, that wanting a relationship with God, and I need that also through all of you. Also, just not looking for perfection. Last night I had an emergency with one of my children. So when I woke up this morning, I didn't have the same routine as I usually do. I usually like to pray first and then get on the meeting. So, you know, I didn't do everything that I usually do, but I came on the meeting first. And right after the meeting, all I want to do is, you know, to continue a deeper connection with God. And that's what this is all about. And also just feeling my emotions. Like I just mentioned, like I had different emotions this morning, you know, and such different ones. And I don't have that when I'm in the food. I just want to hide. I want to crawl under something small and just not exist. And that's not what God is giving me for today. God wants me to live for today. And I'm so grateful for all of you, and I pass. Thank you.
Oh, thanks so much for sharing, Sarah G. Glad you're all here. We need each other. So we're into another list of names, and although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So let's go ahead and get a list of names.
Jennifer
C. Right, let me give you the paragraph, and then we're going to go back to names. Page 32, second paragraph, beginning with the eighth sentence, out came his carpet slippers and a bottle, and going to the end. All I got was Jennifer C. so far.
Sherry 18.
Mm-hmm. Sophie Mora, gotcha.
Okay.
Sue, yep, Sherry, I think I got you. Unless there's
CK, two.
CK, gotcha.
Connie in
Claire
Florida.
S. Connie, gotcha.
Claire in.
Okay, let me tell you, Mary, I think I that was. Let me tell you who I have, and I think that is probably all we can take for right now, and we'll see if we have time. I have Jennifer C., Connie in Florida, Sherry, Sophie, Maura Z, Sue, CK, and Mary. So let's get started with those. I'm so sorry if I didn't hear someone or missed you. We'll have plenty of time in our second hour also hosted with PP. Jennifer C., go right ahead, followed by Connie.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for your service. Thank you, Lead Share, for your beautiful share. Jennifer C. recovered in Greenville, South Carolina. So grateful. You know, I think about the obsession of the mind, as Harlan mentioned. I think about even being a little girl and being at school and thinking about the donuts that were on the counter and how it helped me through my school day, right? Because I had something to look forward to. And you think about this man, his drive for success was so powerful, because it was his God, right? We agnostics. It was his object of worship, his own success. And that was powerful enough because it gave him another obsession of the mind. And it worked until it didn't, right? Because then it was like, check, check, did it, now what? But that whole time, he had another obsession going on that he was looking forward to. Because that was giving him that ease and comfort that when this was all over, he was going to be able to kind of retreat into his ultimate desire, which was to just get obliterated and to have that ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. And it's like a boomerang, right? It comes back and it slices your neck. And the reality is, if I could still look forward to a box of donuts at the end of the day, maybe I would. But for me, it's a boomerang. Because it's not going to be a box. Isn't that crazy? It's not even going to be a box. Because that's just the beginning. And so for me, it's all about these objects of worship being replaced one by one, these obsessions of the mind. And for me, obviously, the food has to be down. The food desire to obliterate myself with food and looking forward to it as my source of ease and comfort has to be eradicated so that I can see straight, right? So I can actually see beyond the food. But then it quickly becomes, what's that number on the scale? How am I doing there, right? And that'll get me pretty far because it's another obsession of the mind. You know, oh, I'm going to lose weight and then I'm going to look fantastic. And so there's that vanity, right? Another obsession of the mind, another object of worship. And what else am I hopping to? Because this book teaches me I've got this mind that wants to obsess about this or that or this or that, resentment, fear, all the things. And this book is teaching me that the central fact of my life, the object of my worship, becomes God. And for me, That's the only way I want to live today. So all these other objects of worship that pop up throughout my day, I got to ask for them to be removed, because you know what? They don't deliver. They lie. They say, you know what? At the end of this, you're going to get exactly what you want. And you know what? At the end of it, I don't, because it never satisfies. In God's will, I'm at peace, and that's where I want to live today. Thank you all for being here. With that, I pass.
Thanks, Jennifer C. Connie, you are up from Florida. Please give us your last initial, too, if you would.
Hi, my name is Connie, recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. And, so many great shares, and grateful to be here. I totally relate to the man of 30. And in so many ways, you know, the nervousness in the morning after the sprees. I mean, I used to stop at, like, three places to eat breakfast just before, like, work started, just to calm my nerves. And the thing is I, with the success in business and ambition, I mean, that, it took me a while to realize, but that was just another way of quieting down the feelings. There was something that would happen to me also when I used to go to work and have these goals and dreams. It's also like it eased my nerves too, you know. And 17 years after being in the same work and, you know, climbing up the ladder and getting successful, like I left, and the unmanageability of life just started hitting me. And, you know, what I realized is after some time is that I really understood step one, the powerless over food, but the manageability took me a really, really long time, because, you know, I was using work also to cope with the emotions and the feelings, and relying on routine. And I knew when I was going to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Like, I got that. Like, and work gave me structure. But, wow, then you take that out, and I almost fell apart again, you know? And I had to have a new experience and rework the steps. And, you know, I remember the shock and puzzle and humiliation when someone told me, you work this program, like, diet with group support, you know? And, you know, I remember that it was puzzling and humiliating, because it's like I felt like I was just wasting so many years. But then I realized, okay, so what did I not get except for diet and group support? And I got opened up to a whole world of spirituality and spiritual practices, and realized that I am a human being with a spirit. I'm just not a robot, you know, that needs to just get, you know, an effect from outside sources, you know. But today there is so much of a stronger foundation with step one. And it takes what it takes, but I'm glad that I'm not the one that's dead after a few years of leaving work, you know. It's just been blessed with so many miracles. So thank you for letting me share.
Thanks so much. Connie from Florida. Sherry, come on in, and you'll be followed by Sophie.
Good morning, this is Sherry H.M. calling from Washington State. Sherry with a C. Oh, wow, I can relate to this. I also was seeking, you know, worldly success, and I had a relationship with God, but really I was very much driven by worldly success about, you know, how do I look in the eyes of others. But I also tried to control for many, many years, and sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, but I was always focused on, you know, on food. My best friend was my sweet in a lot of ways. I thought it was God, but actually, where did I go when things were, you know, when life got lifey? I went into the arms of my refrigerator. And, you know, did the white knuckling and all that. And now I realize that I have two choices. I can go into the arms of my refrigerator, or into the arms, so to speak, of my loving, kind, beautiful God. And, you know, This reminds me of the steps, because this is all about emotional buildup, much emotional buildup, and I stuffed my emotions and I stuffed my faith, and that was, you know, my answer. And so I just love the gift of the steps, because then I can work on, you know, the drivers of this disease, of the resentment, the fears, you know, all these built up fears like our big book talks about, and the resentment that's really the most poisoning thing on the planet. But now I have choices. Everywhere I go, there I am. But, you know, this program, and I love you guys, and I'm on the West Coast, so I don't come to this meeting often, but I just love you guys, and I love the big book, and I'm just so grateful to God for giving me this program. And if you're out there and think, you know, that'll never happen to me, I can't do this, you're right. That's how I felt 11 and a half years ago. But, you know, the miracle is that God can, and I can't, but it's the can't that leads me into the arms of a loving God. So that's all I got, and I pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Sherry H.M. from Washington State, and Sherry with a C. Sophie, you're up, and you'll be followed by Maura Z.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. This is Sophie S. from Tennessee, compulsive overeater. Super grateful to be here with you all. Really grateful for everybody doing service this morning. And I'm really grateful that I got to log on and hear this reading today, because, you know, I always hear what I need to hear, and that's just my higher power speaking to me through all of you. But, you know, when I read something like this, and we think about, he fell victim to a belief, which practically every alcoholic compulsive eater has, that he is, that his longest period of sobriety and self-discipline has qualified him to drink as other men. Yep, my hand goes right up when I hear that, because, you know, I have a disease that makes me think I don't have a disease. I can't even, like, quantify the number of times that I have been, like, resolute that it's never going to happen again, that I was never going to binge eat again, that I was never going to make myself throw up again, all of these things. And I can remember being in so much pain and hating myself. We all know that discomfort and that, like, there's nothing worse than that. And, but yet I get some time together. I'm abstinent for a period of time. I'm working the steps. I'm making my calls. I'm doing everything I need to do. And suddenly I'm like, perhaps we overreacted. Maybe it wasn't as bad as I remember. Maybe it was an overreaction. Do we really need to be on a food plan for the rest of our life? Like, come on. It wasn't that bad, was it? And that right there is insanity, because no person who doesn't have this disease, like, no sane person could look at my behavior and what I was doing to myself and subjecting myself to would say that I wasn't that bad. It was that bad. And that's okay. I have somewhere to go with it. But something I heard a speaker share once that I come back to a lot in this reading made me think of it as, like, stopping versus staying stopped. I could stop. As my disease progressed, it got harder to stop and more impossible, but I couldn't stay stopped. Even if I really thought that, like, no, I'm never going to pick up again. This time really beat me down. This time was my bottom. Like, if I didn't seek out a spiritual solution and start doing things someone else's way instead of relying on my own self-will, I would go back to the food, even if I didn't believe that was possible. And that's what this man of 30 did. And I need this reminder that my disease is waiting out there and it's permanent. And I am only granted the ability to arrest it a day at a time because I'm living on a spiritual basis today. And anytime I have that thought that, like, maybe it wasn't so bad, or maybe I've overreacted, or all those things, that is my disease. That is the monster in my head that wants to get me back out there, and I don't want to do that today. And I'm so grateful that I'm not out there today. And I can so identify with what we're sharing. Thank you. All right. Well, everybody, have a great day. Thanks again.
Thanks. Sophie S., I think from Tennessee. Maura Z., you'll be up, followed by Sue. Let me just, one last reminder where we are, page 32, second paragraph, beginning with the eighth sentence. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle, and ending with the end of that paragraph, quickly, and was dead within 4 years. Maura Z., you are up.
Thank you, moderator. I appreciate your service and all that give service for this meeting. My name is Maura Z., and I'm gratefully recovered in Virginia. Recovered is a magic word. This man was dry for 30 years, but he wasn't recovered because he hadn't treated the illness. He had just treated the symptom. And that's not what this program is about. This program is getting down to causes. And the cause of this man's problem was that he was an alcoholic. And no amount of time could save him from that disease unless he never picked up. But in fact, he did pick up. And as I have picked up after a time, I was recovered for 6 years and life happened. And then what did I do? I picked up and then had the worst relapse of my life, as if there could be a good relapse. 2 years of misery, of absolute misery. I didn't have the option of money and going into a rehab facility. That wasn't afforded to me. I had to decide for myself, finally, whether or not I was going to let this disease take my life or if I was going to pick up the tools, the 12 steps. Those are the tools that matter, the 12 steps. And that's what I finally did, but I had to decide first what. I had to put down the food, and oh my gosh, I did not want to put down the food. I had a great resolve to work the steps, but I knew I couldn't work them in the food. I had to put down the food. And with God's grace, I was able to put down the food. This man did not have a spiritual life, or perhaps he did, but he didn't have the necessary connection, and he didn't have the wherewithal. He didn't have a higher power working in his life. That's the wherewithal we need. This man was dead in 4 years. That could be my lot in life if I don't stay connected to my higher power. And that's where I need to be today, one day at a time, connected to my higher power, so that I don't pick up the food, so that I don't get into my head, well, you know, I haven't had it for a while, so I can go ahead and have one. No, it doesn't work that way. This disease is cunning. This disease is waiting for me to say I can have just one. And unfortunately, that can happen. But the good news is that I have a higher power that's waiting for me. It's in my life. And the higher power tells me, pick me and not the food. And today I choose God and not the food. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Maura Z. Sue, you are up and you'll be followed by CK. Star one. All right, may have misheard. CK, you are up and you'll be followed by Mary.
Peace, family. Can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Peace, family. This is CK from California. Today I have 559 days, and I'm grateful, and I'm a real Bill. Bill used to drink oceans and oceans of alcohol, and I used to eat mounds and mounds of food. And, you know, today the word humiliation, humiliated, really jumped out at me. You know, I used to experience the humiliation of waking up from blackouts surrounded by cookies, cakes, ice cream, candy, just wondering how the hell I ate all that stuff and then passed out from eating it. That was a humiliating experience that I lived over and over and over again. And my higher power saved me from that. You know, after I stopped working the CK program and started working the OA program, I was saved from having that, to experience that type of humiliation. It took me 14 years in the rooms to get a one-year chip because I was strung out on that CK program. Today, I'm experiencing a different kind of humiliation. It's because this humiliation that I'm experiencing today is because I'm not trusting my higher power. After everything my higher power has shown me she can do for me in my life, I'm still not trusting her. I have made a problem bigger than my higher power, and that's humiliating to say out loud. That's humiliating for me to admit out loud that I've made a problem bigger, something that my higher power can't help me with. That's a lonely experience. That's a humiliating experience. And I'm experiencing this humiliation because I have no humility. And the AA 12 and 12 tells me that as long as I place self-reliance first, a genuine reliance upon higher power was out of the question. The basic of all humility is a desire to seek and do God's will. That's missing in me right now. And because that's missing, I'm experiencing this problem. I made a dissertation bigger than my higher power. I'm saying my higher power can't help me write a paper. And the spiritual and emotional death that I'm walking around with is excruciating. And I'm just asking, like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm just apologizing to my higher power and just really trying to seek the willingness to seek her help with everything in my life, because I know she has the power. I know she has the magnitude to help me with anything in my life. And you know, I'm just really at a loss right now today, and I'm hoping I can just surrender and invite her in to help me like she's helped me so many times. So thanks for letting me share, y'all.
Thanks so much, CK from California. And Mary, I'm so sorry I overcounted, and we are out of time in this part of the meeting, but we will in just a couple of minutes resume sharing. So hang tight if you can, please. Thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. Our share ID for today is this 7 a.m. Eastern meeting is 23390. We'll now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And would Marjo please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Good morning. Thank you all for a beautiful meeting. Marjo from Massachusetts, currently in warm and lovely South Carolina. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know, we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.